Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar, which will provide an update about the Telephone Consumer Protection Act and how compliance has become more confusing, I guess, in the wake of the appeals court decision in ACA International v. FCC. While the world awaits a new rule from the FCC regarding how an automated telephone dialing system should be defined, among other issues, the courts have been left to their own devices to determine how to interpret the TCPA and other rules from the FCC. We're fortunate to have a panel of experts from within the collections industry who know a lot more than I do about the TCPA and especially how to comply with it. This webinar is being generously sponsored by TCN. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I wanted to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the armed industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the armed industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Shelley Gensmer is the Vice President of Legal and Compliance for ERC. She's been with the company for the past 2 years. Shelley holds a CCCO designation from ACA International and has more than 13 years of litigation and collections experience, ranging from first party, third party, legal to deceased collections. As she says, she's seen it all. David Kaminsky is a partner at Carlson & Messer in Los Angeles and focuses practice in the defense of the financial services industry. He's recognized in defending against claims brought under consumer protection statutes, including the FDCPA, TCPA, the FCRA, and all other federal state consumer protection laws. He regularly gives presentations at leading industry trade groups throughout the United States. David was a 2015 ACA International Attorney of the Year and was the 2013 to 2015 Chair of the Attorneys Division of ACA International. He also served on the ACA Regulatory Committee and the ACA Education Committee. Don Maurice is a partner at Maurice Wisher, representing the financial services industry in compliance matters, trials, and appeals of individual and class actions. Don is a regent of the American College of Consumer Financial Services Lawyers and serves on the governing committee of the Conference on Consumer Finance Law. He formerly chaired the Debt Collection Practices and Bankruptcy Subcommittee of the American Bar Association and serves as outside counsel to the Receivables Management Association International, the trade association for debt purchasers. He is admitted to the bars of Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, and the District of Columbia, and has practiced law since 1988. Unfortunately, Alicia McKeegan can't be with us today. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by myself. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please type it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. Today's event is an audio-only event, and so if you're not seeing anything on your screen, you're not missing anything. Today's event is being recorded, and a recording of this discussion will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. And finally, because we're going to be talking about some compliance and legal topics today, let me read the following disclaimer. This information is not intended to be legal advice and may not be used as legal advice. Every effort has been made to ensure this information is up to date. It is not intended to be a full and exhaustive explanation of the law in any area, nor should it be used to replace the advice of your own legal counsel. And the opinions expressed are the opinions of the speaker and not their organization. And with that, let's launch into today's discussion. So first, what I'd like to do maybe is sort of set the scene and talk a little bit about some of the cases and rulings that have affected the armed industry in the wake of ACA International v. FCC. There have been some rulings at the district and appellate level. And David, maybe you just want to take a quick second and walk us through some of those, and then we can start to dive into greater detail.
Sure. Well, thank you so much, TCN, for sponsoring this. Thank you so much, Mike Gibb, for putting this together. Very happy to be with my esteemed panelists, Don Maurice, Shelley Gensmer. And we have a lot to talk about today, so just bear with us all. So let's talk about what's been going on in the industry. As you all know, there's been almost approximately 16, 17 decisions that have come down since the March 2018 ACA versus FCC ruling. And so many of these cases focusing on what is a dialer have asked this question. What remains after ACA versus FCC? What is the new landscape? It seems clear from almost all the decisions that have come out that the ACA versus FCC decision invalidated the FCC's 2015 ruling, which gave all its pronouncements regarding predictive dialers, consent, et cetera, et cetera. What is an auto dialer? And as you all know, that decision basically said, look, FCC, the problem is you were all over the place. You had about five or six definitions as to what constitutes an auto dialer. So we're throwing all that out. In addition, you made all these big pronouncements about predictive dialers, but you gave no clarity on that and as to why you just lumped predictive dialers as a, quote, prohibited dialer. We're going to throw that out as well. But the question remains after that is, well, what's going on here? What about that 2003 FCC ruling? Huh, that's interesting. That ruling dealt with predictive dialers and dealt with the issue of auto dialers. It was the first FCC ruling to basically say that a predictive dialer falls into the fold of the TCPA and constitutes a prohibited dialer because it has the capacity to dial numbers without human intervention. That's what the FCC said. 2008, pretty much almost said the same thing that the FCC said back in 2003. They reiterated their auto dialer pronouncement, plus gave some little good, some good benefits to the industry in that ruling as well. That part we actually like. So many of these decisions post ACA versus FCC have grappled with this decision. And there's been some really excellent decisions. And sometimes we're getting excellent decisions from surprising sources. I mean, just recently, we've had a decision out of the Eastern District of Michigan just last week on August 16th called Keys. And Keys versus Ocwen basically said, look, everything's out the window. The FCC 2015 is out the window, and so is the 2003 and the 2008 pronouncements. Why this decision is also excellent is that they looked at one of the plaintiff's counsel's key experts that the plaintiff's counsel throughout the country use, a gentleman named Hansen. Some of you may have heard of his name. Mr. Hansen has been probably the plaintiff's bar expert du jour, their favorite expert. And they basically said, hey, look, you rendering legal conclusions here and determining what's a dialer and what's not a dialer, that's out the door. You can't render a legal conclusion, so we're throwing out your opinion. The good thing is also that they said an aspect dialer is not a dialer under the TCPA. And this is a very important issue, and this is an issue that just bear with me here. Expert Hansen has been running around the country basically saying, hey, look, so many of these companies that use dialers or calling systems of every kind, they do it in conjunction with a Linus Windows setup, and almost every company does. And his philosophy is a Linus Windows setup, that combination, that system can dial random and sequential numbers. It's very easy to program and can easily be done. So he's saying, hey, if you're using a dialing or calling system and you're using a Windows or Linus system in combination, sorry, you've got an auto dialer under the law. Well, this judge actually really got it right. And he said, look, almost every computer system throughout the country uses either Windows, Linus, or a combination of the two. If you're going to say that combination, Mr. Hansen, renders a dialer an auto dialer, well, that's absolutely crazy, because then you're getting into the whole issue that the ACA versus FCC decision raised, which was this. If you can add an app to a cell phone and therefore create potential auto dial capability, then every single cell phone in the country has the capacity to be an auto dialer. That's insane. It's not what the TC, quote, meant to do. The FCC, the ACA versus FCC decision said you've gone too far. And this decision, this Keys decision basically says, look, taking that, if you're going to extrapolate that editing system that uses Linus Windows as a dialer, forget it. That doesn't make sense. You've gone too far. And they basically brought it home where they're following a couple other decisions, some very good decisions. This Keyes decision out of Michigan says, hey, we got to go back to the statutory definition. And that says you got to use a random and sequential number generation under the current statutory definition. And if you're not using that, and if you cannot flick a switch that turns on a random and sequential number generation capability, then you don't have a dialer. Excellent decision. Interesting that it's out of the Eastern District of Michigan. Eastern District of Michigan also had a very good decision, also just 2 weeks before, called the Gary case. Very recently, all of you heard out of the Northern District of Illinois, we had the Pincus case. Another excellent, outstanding decision that basically said, look, we're going, the 2003-2008 rulings and the 2015 rulings were all invalidated by ACA versus FCC. And these are some of the decisions that really, really help us in the industry. In addition to the Second Circuit, or rather the Third Circuit decision in Dominguez versus Yahoo, it says, hey, we're back before, we're what the law was before 2015. And basically, if you don't have a present capacity to dial random and sequential numbers, then you don't have an ATDS, you don't have an autodialer. That's Dominguez, and that's a Third Circuit Court of Appeal decision. And when you have a Court of Appeal, Federal Appellate Court of Appeal decision, it's binding within the states that fall within that jurisdiction, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, et cetera. So those are some of the great pronouncements that we have. And what I see, and maybe Don and Shelley will back me up here, is that we're seeing the tide is turning. Yes, there are several decisions that do favor potentially the plaintiff's bar. While those decisions say that the 2015 ruling is out, many of them say that the 2003 and 2008 rulings by the FCC were not, in fact, invalidated by the ACA versus FCC decision. You've got, gosh, two or three now out of Florida that said that. And then you have four out of California that said that. You've got one out of Georgia, and you've got, one out of Nevada. And so, again, there's some very good decisions that have helped us, and there's some decisions that are not that favorable to us. But the tide is turning. I think the judges are starting to get it. There are certain jurisdictions that are looking at this finally with an open mind, and I think we're making tremendous progress. Don, thoughts in that regard?
Sure. Well, good afternoon to everyone, and good morning to those of you on the West Coast. This is Don Maurice, and it's a pleasure to be here, and it's a great panel, and it's a great topic. TCPA. And, you know, David really took you through, I think, the landscape of where we're at. Many of you know Jack Gordon and Web Recon. And the last stats Jack posted on TCPA showed that there was a 27% decline in TCPA lawsuits from the past year. And I think that's pretty indicative of, more than anything, the ACA ruling. There's obviously two levels of players, I think, in the plaintiff landscape on TCPA, those who really know what they're doing, and those who will file a complaint for any reason or no reason at all. And so for those that really know what they're doing, ACA is a game changer. The 2015 declaratory ruling, I still believe, was assembled by a cadre of plaintiff attorneys. It absolutely made no sense how you could arrive at those decisions unless you really intended to sue the world for using a telephone. And as David pointed out, it's exactly, I think, the way you could interpret it. I mean, did you dial someone? And could you somehow attach something to your phone or your computer system to turn it into an ATDS? And if that potential existed, well, you know, you could be sued. Well, that's crazy. And the D.C. Circuit took the FCC to task for that. And I'm glad that they did, because it made your lives, those of any business, in fact, forget about collectors. I mean, the TCPA applies to anyone using the type of technology that it regulates. And the implications on businesses that try to provide services that their consumers want and customers want is it was horrendous. And so the definition, I think, from the 2015 is clearly gone. We've had two circuit courts of appeals. Dave mentioned Dominguez, which, David, if you go back to the Third Circuit's earlier ruling, they had seemed to already be departing from the FCC's interpretation as decision. And the second time, they with much glee, they departed from that. And then we also had just a few days before, I think it was after the Third Circuit came down with its ruling. The Second Circuit also had an excellent ruling in King versus Time Warner, and pretty much aligned with the view that the fact that you may be able to slap something on your phone system isn't going to be enough to bring a TCPA claim. And that's really good. We have that understanding, at least, that that part of the 2015 is out. Now, David did mention that there are certain courts, and so it seems like a whole bunch coming up there from the Sixth Circuit in Michigan and even Ohio, talking about the fact that the predictive dialer definitions, right, from 2003 and 2008 are gone, too. And I really think that they are, because I think it's the same rationale was used in the 2015 and was actually came from those earlier rulings. So I think the courts that have thrown that out too, they seem to be in the majority, though we do seem to have a few that unfortunately don't go that way. And David, it seems like where you are in California, you're having almost a battle between what you had in the court in Nevada, and that was at the CBE case, right?
Right.
And the recent decision, I think, that came out of there saying that it didn't affect the 2003 and 2008, and actually kind of almost hinted that capacity may be a little bit broader than the ACA decision would allow it to be, which I think restricted it. In fact, I think that decision, I had it up on my screen, but my computer just went haywire. That decision even suggested, at least the court there, that they weren't bound by District of Columbia, the DC Court of Appeals, which I think is patently wrong, because as I understand it, ACA was multi-jurisdictional litigation, and it was all placed with that court. So they would be bound by it, and the majority of courts would agree with that. So I think.
And Don, wait,
now,
Don, you're making, Don, excuse me, you're making a good point there. And, you know, with regard to the 2015 ruling, and if you just look at that ruling, sorry, if you look at the ACA versus FCC ruling of March of this year, and you look at it logically, and if they're saying that, well, wait a second, all of the predictive dialer rulings are out, and all of your capacity and your dialer interpretation rulings are out because they don't make sense, and you were all over the place, and you could have picked one FCC. You could have gone with one of your, quote, pronouncements on what is an auto dialer, and we would have gone with you, but you didn't. You have five different definitions. But you're right, Don. If that all emanates from 2003 and the 2008 FCC rulings, then how does any court conclude that those rulings are not out? Because then you have some inconsistency. How is the 2015 ruling of the FCC out, but not the 2003 and the 2008, which actually spawned the 2015 ruling?
Right.
So
exactly,
it just doesn't make sense. And I think the courts that are saying that those older FCC rulings are out makes the most sense.
Yes. So I think, and if you want to see, I think how this plays out, with, you know, present capacity, what does it mean versus potential capacity. The Second Circuit in the Time Warner, King versus Time Warner, really goes into that and says that if it has a function that you can, that is attached to it, that you can flip on and begin to use a random or sequential number generator, well, then you're within the definition of an ATDS. But if it's something that's not there and that you have to attach to it or somehow program into it, I think that you're going to be in a far better position than you were before the ACA decision. But the next element, guys, that really troubles me is that this really doesn't mean that TCPA suits can't be brought. And there is a whole group of people out there who just love to bring TCPA suits. And we know those pro ses and those other plaintiff's attorneys. And we're still seeing post-ACA some decisions from district courts. So these are not necessarily binding, but district court decisions where they're not dismissing these cases simply because a person alleges it's an ATDS in the complaint and without giving us much more. Some courts have not said, well, they don't have to plead that it has a random or sequential number generator. And they're relying on old decisions pre-ACA in making those determinations. We just had one here in New Jersey post-Dominguez. And as David pointed out, Dominguez Third Circuit Court of Appeals covers New Jersey as well. And the court didn't dismiss a complaint that just alleged it was an ATDS. We had one out of, I believe it was Maine recently as well. And I'm sure there are plenty of others. And that's troubling to me because, you know, if we're going to have the benefit of the ACA ruling and what it means, and what it means to me, and I think to the Second and Third Circuits, is that you have the ability right now, maybe just flipping a switch that creates that ability. It doesn't necessarily have to make the call, at least that's what the Second Circuit says. But you've got to plead that. You can't tell me that you received a call and heard a click. Or heard a pause. You need to say more to bring it in line with what the law is now that the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals throughout the 2015 interpretation. Now, maybe that's just the lawyering that went on in those cases, because in the case in New Jersey, the Seilman case, which came out August 2nd, it doesn't even reference Dominguez, which I found very odd, because that is the current state of the law. Go ahead.
Don, quick question. So for all those listening, Don is from New Jersey. So when he says the word Dominguez, you're probably saying, what the heck is he talking about? I'm in California here. So we pronounce that case Dominguez versus Yahoo. Yeah. But
well, there you go. So, you know,
Shelley, what are your thoughts?
I was kind of giggling at the Dominguez thing. But and I'm from Minneapolis. But we would agree that it would be called Dominguez. you know, and just to point out that my name is it is Shelley, not Shecky, as is on the panel there. They probably did that.
Sorry.
It's okay. I think they were hoping I was going to be the comedic relief for this particular panel. I make no promises in that regard. But to the discussion, I want to add that, you know, I think I have to agree that more and more courts are obviously leaning towards getting it right, probably for several reasons. Not only are judges growing weary and tired of, and quite frankly, intolerant of seeing the abuse of plaintiffs' attorneys and trying desperately to just mold these laws into whatever it is they can possibly mold them into. I will say, as far as decisions not quite aligning with the rest of the jurisdictions, I, the Seventh District seems to be holding on pretty tightly to the 2003 and 2008 FCC orders. The first example of that was Reyes And that came out, I think, May of 2018. That was the first one that kind of called out the ACA for not, showing that it was over, not expressly stating, I guess is a better way to put it, overruling the FCC ruling of 2015.
And Shelley, that's out of Florida, right? Florida seems to...
It is, yeah. Yep, so we've got a couple of those down here, and in the state I currently reside, I think we had another one too, also in Maine, that was Suwannee. And the court also found that the 2003 and 2008 orders, would remain in effect following the ACA and they granted summary judgment for the plaintiff. And even though that particular district, happens to kind of hold on to it, I think what's gotten us out of it, quite frankly, is the system that we're using currently at ERC, and that has changed everything and kind of turned the tides for us, because there's just no capacity for that particular dialing system to be an ATDS under any of the rulings. So, hopefully that one will join suit and start hitting the trend and moving along with the rest of the country here soon.
Shelley, this is David here, and as you, Don, and I were talking about earlier today, we talked about, what's, sort of next on the horizon, what's coming up, and we're looking at the, at least out here in the Ninth Circuit, which then covers all of those states, Hawaii, Nevada, California, Arizona, Washington, et cetera, and about nine states that are within the Ninth Circuit. So it's a huge circuit, in California, of course, as well. So versus Crunch San Diego, that case right now is they are poised, the Ninth Circuit, to rule. And this is the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So if we have a Ninth Circuit pronouncement, that is least going to govern the law in all of those states in the West sort of region of the United States once that decision comes out, and then could be followed by other states throughout the country if they like it. Marks versus Crunch San Diego is basically looking at the issues of, first of all, could the court strike the FCC's 2003 and 2008 rulings? Are those rulings still in play? So that's going to be huge. And then, of course, it is a text platform that they were looking at. It's so many of these cases that we've seen that Shelley, Don, and I have been talking about are actually text message cases. They're not all predictive dialer cases. There's a few. And Ninth Circuit, the question before it is also, basically, if a system that sends text to cell phones, can it be a dialer if that system basically doesn't have the capacity to generate random and sequential phone numbers? Because text message platforms, they could say, okay, yeah, we can send millions of texts in a couple of minutes. That's not the point, but we're not doing it. And we have our text message platform has absolutely no ability to just generate random and sequential phone numbers. The numbers are input from a database. And actually, that part was done with human intervention. So, very interesting issues. It's the question is going to be, with the Ninth Circuit looking at everything that's going on through the country, four district court decisions in California alone that have said that the FCC's 2003 and 2008 pronouncements are still in play, that the predictive dialer decisions are still in play. And in fact, one said recently that, hey, look, I think that the system, and it is an auto dialer because it possesses predictive dialing capabilities. So you see some jurisdictions are still looking at that. The Ninth Circuit's going to look at that. And the question is whether they're going to make the decision narrow and only make it relevant to the Marks case, or are they going to make a broader pronouncement regarding the interpretation of what is a dialer under the TCPA and how the TCPA on the auto dialer issue should be interpreted. So all eyes are on that decision right now, and we remain to see what is going to happen. And the Ninth Circuit now they finished all the briefing in that case. Everybody submitted their briefs post ACA versus FCC decision. So their eyes are open now and looking at every single decision that's come out through the country. It's going to be very interesting to see which way they lean. And it is, the good thing is, it is actually a, I know you're all laughing here when I say this, a conservative panel on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. They are all George Bush appointees. So that, I think, bodes well for industry in general. But we just don't know how far they're going to go. But it's going to be very, very interesting.
I think that will be huge when you look at, because then you'll have the Circuit of Appeals decisions from both sides of the coast. You know, it's really hard for all those of us that fall in between there not to take and follow suit. So that will be very beneficial.
I think so, Sir Kelly. That's a great point.
At this point, I just want to pause the discussion briefly, and I'd like to talk a little bit about today's webinar sponsor, TCN. TCN is a leading provider of cloud-based call center technology for enterprises, contact centers, BPOs, and collection agencies worldwide. Founded in 1999, TCN combines a deep understanding of the needs of call center users with a highly affordable delivery model, ensuring immediate access to robust call center technology such as predictive dialer, IVR, call recording, and business analytics required to optimize operations and adhere to TCPA regulations. It's always-on cloud-based delivery model provides customers with immediate access to the latest version of the TCN solution, as well as the ability to quickly and easily scale and adjust to evolving business needs. TCN serves various Fortune 500 companies and enterprises in multiple industries, including newspaper, collection, education, healthcare, automotive, political, customer service, and marketing. TCN is engaged and actively involved in understanding TCPA changes and how it is changing the industry. TCN regularly speaks to local and national leaders to help educate them on matters of TCPA and compliance for the betterment of the industry as a whole. For more information about TCN, please go to www.tcnp3.com. Thanks again to TCN for sponsoring today's webinar. I'm sure I speak for all of us listening when I say we appreciate your generous support. Now, let's get back to the discussion. Don, I want to come back to you. David sort of started talking about our next topic, which was cases, sort of pending cases before the district or appellate level in terms of cases that could be relevant to TCPA compliance. He mentioned the Marks case. Are there other cases that that are pending that have the potential to impact the industry?
Well, I mean, the one I mentioned in New Jersey, Seilman, that we just got a decision on the other day, is still floating through. There are plenty of cases that haven't been dismissed yet on the ATDS issue, even post-ACA, that all can produce some type of bizarre result. But I think the Ninth Circuit is the one case that I'm aware of that is the closest to getting a decision on.
Yeah. And I think that there will be a few others that potentially could emanate, at least from an appeal from California. But by the time those courts hit the appellate track, the Marks decision will have already been issued. So I think there's a lot of cases throughout the country that are poised in also different jurisdictions for an appeal. So it's going to be very interesting. The game's not over, and Shelley, Don, and I are fighting every day, for your rights here, because we think finally that ACA versus FCC decision gave us some breathing room. It allowed us to take a step back and said, okay, this all makes sense. We are sort of back to, at least in several jurisdictions, we're back to square one, which is the TCPA's definition, and the FCC, as we know, is poised to do certain things. Mike, I don't know if we're ready to go on to that, but I just wanted to mention something that the FCC just did the other day. But if we're not ready there, I'll certainly defer.
No, go ahead. Take a minute and talk about it.
Sure. So as many of you know, so May 8th, 2018, Chairman Pai from the FCC. And remember, the FCC right now is stacked with a majority of Republican commissioners and leaderships. So this is a time that if any changes are going to be made, we have this opportunity and this window. And Shelley and I were just recently talking about what recently happened with the FCC. So just to take a step back from that, FCC, May 8th, 2018, Chairman Pai says, look, the FCC, we're working on rules. We want to change the definition of the auto dialer, reassign numbers, revocation, and a couple of other issues. And we also, they put out a notice of proposed rulemaking that, to make changes to the TCPA, to the dialer ruling. And there have been a flurry of comments that came in from industry and also that came in from the plaintiffs bar, the National Consumer Law Center, NCLC, being extraordinarily vocal in that regard. And I recently had a discussion with one of the heads of the FCC consumer division and has responsibility for TCPA rulemaking, and they believed, at least they opine, that change is in the air and it may be good change for industry. And that's a somewhat sigh of relief here. Just on August 16th, last week, right, last Thursday, senators questioned the FCC Chairman Pai and the commissioners at an oversight hearing. And during that hearing, basically the FCC, the chairman himself and the commissioners had testified, and they said, and basically that, look, they changes in the air, they need to make change. It was Senator Thune, if I'm pronouncing that right, he kicked off this hearing and basically said, look, we got to restore reason to the TCPA rules. We got to make sure that callers can call their own customers. And that, I thought, was one of the best pronouncements that came out of that August 16th oversight hearing. Just that pronouncement, because it really put focus. You know, he said, look, so many companies are making good faith efforts to comply with the law, and they're doing so, but they're not able to do so without facing a threat of litigation, even from being a good actor, only call their customers using equipment which they believe doesn't violate the TCPA, and only calling their customers and trying to, quote, get and capture consent and follow the rules under the TCPA. But even in doing so, they can't call their own customers. It's a business killer. And so that was great from Senator Thune. But then you had the opposite, and you had Senator Markey, who, you know, looked at the commission's efforts, the FCC's efforts, and says, look, FCC, I think it's your job that you've got to ensure robust protection for consumers against robocalling. And if you start to lift these rules, and may I say this for everybody on the phone, look, with regard to these rules, and when you have courts saying this system or that system isn't an auto dialer, or you have the court saying you don't have an auto dialer until you have the ability to, quote, and sequentially generate numbers, or to flick a switch on your dialing system that gives you random and sequential number generation capacity, right? If those rules are great for industry. But that means it's good for all industry, because the TCPA doesn't really discriminate. Yes, there are specific rules for telemarketing calls versus informational calls. What we do, at least I think most people on this phone call, we're making only informational calls, not marketing calls. You don't call people for payment purposes and then try to upsell them a Westinghouse washing machine. But anyway, so if these rules are great for industry, meaning us, then they're also good for the telemarketing industry. The telemarketing industry is very happy right now because they're saying, hey, you don't have a dialer. So if this court says I don't have a dialer, then I'm not making a call that's prohibited under the TCPA. Yes, the telemarketing industry is still restricted by those who lodge their numbers on the do not call list. But other than that, it's the same dialer law. If it's not a dialer for an informational call, then it's not a dialer for a telemarketing call, because the systems are the same for both entities, no matter who's using it. So again, here you had the Congress, right, pushing on the FCC, one saying you've got to restore saneness to business and allow businesses to operate and function. And he said, you cannot take us back, right? You cannot take us back to 1972. We didn't have predictive dialers then. But you can't take us back then. You're going to kill our business. We've got to move forward. Technology's moving forward. How in the world do you tell the world, yes, we've got to move forward with technology, but you have to tell industry history. No, you have to go 50 to 60 years back with regard to the calling systems that you use. Makes no sense. Again, pressure was on from Congress to the FCC also to watch out for consumers and to protect them and to make sure that there were no robocalls. But as Senator Thune pointed out, those who are calling for payment purposes, those who are calling their own customers for whatever business-related reason, a customer service reason, quote, has nothing to do with robocalls. And I think that distinguishment is so important in the law. It's the thing that I've been fighting for years. Don has been fighting. Shelley's been fighting because we want to say we're not doing robocalls. We call our customers. We intend to call our customers. That's what our businesses do. We have no we gain nothing from calling someone who is not a customer. It doesn't get us anywhere. All it does is, quote, actually hurt our business because that's time and money we lose. So it's our goal as industry and business to only call our customers. And I think that distinguishment that was made during that FCC hearing was so key. So we'll see how this all pans out.
Thanks, David. Shelley, I wonder if you could maybe sort of clarify something for me. You know, I'm picturing like a collection agency with like this massive whiteboard or this massive wall where there's like, it's like a checklist of sort of what they can and can't do in different districts because of the, you know, their different rules and different rulings. Is that kind of what it's like? Or how do you sort of manage all of these different rulings in terms of what you can and can't do in terms of how you make these calls?
Well, to be quite frank, what we've done is just use a system to kind of blanket all calls across the board. And the system that we use has been found in all districts, you know, unanimously has been found to not qualify as an automatic, you know, as an ATDS. So we, if you look at your whiteboard, so to speak, right, and you draw a big old funnel on there, we have a scrub in place that takes and looks for all mobile phone numbers and puts them into one bucket and separates out the landlines. The landlines, we will use one dialer, and on the others, of course, we use the human call intervention system. So, I mean, that was the best way that we could possibly accomplish staying what we believe to be obviously compliant across the country, was to just use the one dialer that we know has been, you know, received well amongst courts for the industry. So I realized that, you know, everybody's got different systems and looking at the different rulings and some of the other systems that are being found to not be an ATDS. It sounds like the bulk of the issue is actually to just make sure that there is manual intervention, which we have. So I don't know, Shelley, what you had on your whiteboard, but that's what's on our whiteboard.
Shelley,
a big old funnel.
In talking about this whole whiteboard issue, we're talking about, you know, some of the best practices. I see what you're saying, that you're using a click-to-dial process, and you were saying there's about seven decisions throughout the country, about five pre and two post, that have dealt with this issue of a click-to-dial process or a click-to-dial system. And there's been fantastic pronouncements in that regard. But I guess, you know, in looking at this, if a company is using a system which appears to be or acts like or sounds like or looks like a predictive dialer, you know, I don't think that's none of us, I think, on this phone are saying, okay, you have a free run, just go ahead and start, you know, making calls, because certain jurisdictions have already said that, hey, unless your predictive dialer has this random or sequential number generator program, or you could flip a switch, you're good to go. But there are so many jurisdictions, we saw Florida, California, that are still looking at the issue of predictive dialer and saying, oh, gosh, you know, I don't think the ACA versus FCC invalidated that part, those predictive dialer rulings. So if you have one court in California said you have a predictive dialer, sorry, you have a prohibited dialer under the TCPA. So I think when you are using your predictive dialing systems, look to how it is configured, look to how it's functioning. I know that certain predictive dialer systems can be used in very various manners and various modes and have certain capacities. But, you know, because the law is all over the place with regard to predictive dialers, depending on where, which jurisdiction you're in. And I know you sitting there and, you know, those on the phone, you're saying, oh, wait a second, we can't worry about using a predictive dialer in Florida. Is it Illinois? Am I okay there? Am I okay in Michigan, Ohio? You can't deal with that issue. So when you're using, or if you're using a predictive dialer, I think the best word of caution is to still make sure that you have, at least to the best of your ability, consent to dial that number, because then you have, quote, your evidence. You have your evidence of consent, and you have a defense, potential defense to a TCPA action, and can certainly minimize your potential risks of liability. So consent is still key with respect to everything that all of us are talking about today. It really is still your key, because then you're not concerned so much with what kind of equipment you're using, because you say, I have consent, I have the data, I have the evidence to back it up, and I could prove it in the terrible event that I am ever brought into litigation. I can hand over that application or that whatever agreement that the consumer may have signed. I could give it right to the plaintiff's counsel and say, game over, I've got consent. So at least that's still what all three of us on this phone, I think, urge that everybody still try to get, because that is one of the major and compliance pieces of the TCPA.
Absolutely. And to that point, another thing that we've done is that we've pushed some of that back onto our clients and their agreements. And there's been changes that they make specifically with their contractual obligations between the consumer and the actual client. You know, you got ABC company that is signing a telecommunications contract with, you know, Mr. Smith. And in that contract, it already states that that ABC company, its vendors, and anybody it contracts with is permitted to dial or contact Mr. Smith, you know, by any means possible. And oftentimes it'll actually say, including by use of any TBS. We've been very successful in putting that on our clients and asking them to include that into their language. And that's saved us more than once. And where that can't happen, definitely make sure that you're looking at your talk off with agents and consumers, and, you know, put that question in there. Do we have permission to dial you using our, our automatic telephone dialing? So, you know, like using that and having that and recording that, saving your recording so the consumer giving that consent. Like you said, David, it kind of shuts the door on any argument as to whether there was consent or whether it was not.
Shelley, this is David again. That is such a great point. And I know Don agrees with us here. And the reason why it's so important is that you mentioned something about terms and conditions. And look, we know for many of you here that are relying on your clients, the creditors, terms and conditions, you're only so good as those terms and conditions. But as we are saying, I myself, and I know that Shelley and Don have too, I've worked with clients in substantially revising terms and conditions for several of my creditor clients. And we've made very broad and robust changes to the terms and conditions to capture the consent, to tell the consumer the type of equipment that we will be calling from, not just, of course, the creditor itself, but anyone who the creditor retains, all of its agents, its independent contractors, and making that so broad so that it captures not just for the benefit of the creditor, but everybody on down the line. But it also does help creditors when they help everybody down the line. For this reason, if they help everybody down the line and then someone can defend themselves because they're saying, hey, I know you're suing me, but look at the terms and conditions you signed with creditor X. Sorry, you have no path here. Your door is closed. That actually helps the creditor, because then the plaintiff isn't going to be looking at the creditor and say, oh, well, you made a mistake here. You have potential liability. And now I'm going to go after your creditor as well on a vicarious liability theory. So the better and the more robust those terms and conditions are that protects not only the creditor, but everyone down the line, it is a win-win for everyone. And I think it just makes great sense. And most of you have seen that at least recently on the revocation side. Some terms and conditions specify the manner in which a particular consumer may revoke consent. They're not saying that you can't, but they're going to say, if you want to revoke your consent to be called, you need to, quote, send us a letter in writing to this address and reference your account number. Various courts throughout the country seen lately on the revocation side have said, well, look, this is a contractual provision, and the ACA versus FCC decision says, you know, contractual provisions are still in play and you got to honor contracts. So if there's a specific way to revoke and the consumer did agree to those terms and conditions and didn't do it in that manner, well, maybe they don't have authority or the ability to revoke at all. And on the flip side, what we're seeing is some very good decisions also that are consistently following that Second Circuit Reyes versus Lincoln case, which said that basically, look, you signed up for a contract, you agreed to it, you agreed to all the terms and conditions from, I'll just give an example, Comcast company. You've agreed to all the terms and conditions, okay, you're bound because it's a bilateral contract and you just cannot unilaterally revoke a bilateral contract. So that argument plus the, hey, there were specific terms in the contract that told you how you can revoke, you didn't follow those, and you tried to unilaterally revoke, you can't do either. It almost helps you get a double shot at defending one of those cases. And some, as we said, very good decisions have come out recently. And one just from August 9th called FEW, F-E-W, versus Receivables Performance. And congrats to Receivables Performance on that great decision.
Thanks, David. Don, I wanted to sort of come out and ask you sort of a point blank question. Should collection agencies be more or less inclined to settle or fight TCPA lawsuits in today's environment?
Well, settlement
is a loaded gun.
Yeah, settlement is always good if the economics are there. I think that the ruling, the ACA, and the courts that have applied it correctly helps in achieving that that economic result that a client would want as part of a settlement. I think it's certainly in the cases that I have had pending, where I think sizable offers were made pre-ACA decision that were not accepted are not being placed back on the table post-ACA. So that ought to give you an idea. I think that if it always depends, Mike, on the amount of the demand that's being made from the plaintiff too. I mean, sometimes you just don't have any choice but to litigate the case. But I think that for rational plaintiffs, attorneys that understand the impact of ACA, and I think that most of the cases that I've dealt with personally, the defendant has had a very thorough vetting of their telephone technology and are certain that it would not meet the present definition of what an ATDS is, they're going to settle only at a sum that gives them that economic benefit in avoiding continued litigation. I think for some, too, on the plaintiff's side, can to make an argument that this type of potential capacity is still in play, especially here in the Third and the Second Circuits. It could be a basis later on for fees, although that's always a long shot, right? But I think that if people are going to try to hang on to that after the decisions in the Yahoo case, I will call it now, in the Third Circuit, and the King versus Time Warner in the Second, I think that they're treading on precarious ground.
That's a good point, Don.
Do you think then, I mean, I thought, again, clearly not a lawyer, but I thought that there were collection agencies or there were companies that might be seeking stays in TCPA cases as this whole FCC rulemaking plays out. Is that something you're seeing and or recommending?
You know, it's funny. I keep going back to this Seilman case in New Jersey that just came down earlier this month, and a stay was requested and it was denied. It's really going to depend on the court. I think you're in a pretty good position right now. I really don't know how the rules are going to turn out. But I think if you've got a court sticking to the statutory definition, if that's how the courts where you are going, you're in a pretty good position now. I don't know if you want to stay. I think you're going to have to evaluate the court that you're in, particularly if that judge has rendered opinions, the type of technology you have, the value of the experts report that you have, or the other evidence that you have of what type of telephone system that you use to make that call, rather than sit around and wait for rules, because that's an unknown. I mean, I just can't, I wish I could predict what rules would say. If I could do things like that, I wouldn't be practicing law. I'd be fully trading every day in the markets, but I can't do that. I can't do that. And so we don't know how long these rules will take anyway. I mean, look at the debt collection rules. All my kids will be out of college. They weren't even in college. They'll be out of college by the time these rules come out. So I don't know if you can really. I mean, the rulemaking is a very early process too. So I don't know. Has anyone seen a stay?
I was actually going to just chime in and say that oddly enough, we have a couple of TCPA cases that the other one finally came to their senses and dismissed. But we've got one that is trying to introduce a little bit of a new theory on the HCI system and how they believe it makes it an ATDS. And after talking through their own expert and ERC getting an expert and all this discussion, suddenly we find out that plaintiff's attorney wants to file a stay pending the result of the FCC ruling, which is very interesting. So,
you know,
we didn't
Shelley, that is interesting. Shelley, that is interesting. I think that's sort of ill-conceived, because I don't think, at least with the type of click-to-dial system and the pronouncements that have come out so far, look, it doesn't almost matter which way the courts, let's say, rule with, like, say, a decision, a finality, if there is going to be one, because on the click-to-dial front, if they say, oh, no, 2003 and 2008 decisions are still into play, well, then you've got the human intervention pronouncement, and how do you not have human intervention with a click-to-dial system, and there's seven decisions in that regard. And then even if the decision says, okay, the 2003 and 2008 are not in play, you must have a random and sequential number generator to have a dialer. Well, then the dial companies are all going to say, none of us even have anything remotely relevant to that. So, yeah. You know, exactly. getting, so when you're thinking of a stay, and as Don said, I think there's so many factors that you have to look at. Or you have to ask yourself, are we better off without a stay here? Are we in a jurisdiction that has given us such great pronouncements right now that we should fight plaintiff counsel because we have a good argument here and the court would likely or potentially side with us? And then you have to decide, you know, is this, when you, if you're in a stay, well, what's going to happen? I mean, there's very few cases that are up on appeal. If you ask for a stay, right, the Ninth Circuit, someone will say, well, that the Ninth Circuit is not our circuit. So, yes, they're poised to rule, but that's not us. So,
let me throw this little piece of history in there. There were many defendants requesting stays pending the 2015 declaratory ruling, and that didn't go very well. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. We talked about the crunch case, right? That's Mr. Kazarunian's case too. And that's exactly what he said back then, is that, you know, be careful what you wish for. I think that if there is going to be that type of situation, it's going to arise from that Ninth Circuit decision if it goes counter to what the Third and the Second are saying, and is granted, if it's taken up and cert is granted, I think that everyone's going to be staying everything. pending the ruling. But that's all in the future. All in the future.
Yeah. And this is maybe the time with a TCPA action that you can settle it so reasonably because of the leverage we have from so many cases. Sometimes that even a case that looks potentially difficult can be resolved because I think some in the plaintiff's bar, or they don't want themselves to get additional bad decisions for their own industry, and sometimes they're willing to take tremendous haircuts. Sometimes you may have to fight. You've got to look at your case, look at the economics, look at the court you're in, look at the rulings in the court. There's so many different factors that play in, but you know, you talk to your counsel, you'll make the right decision.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, we've reached the top of the hour and we've run out of time, and I still have 1,000 more questions I'd like to ask. So unfortunately, I'm not going to get the chance today to do it, but we'll probably do this again in the future because I'm sure there are more rulings and developments on the horizon that will likely change everything that we've talked about today. But before I let everybody go, I want to thank Don and Shelley and David for their insights and their time today. This webinar would not have been possible without their participation. I also wanted to thank TCN for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.tcnp3.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and who listened to today's webinar. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. Again, a recording of this event will be posted in the next day or so. I really appreciate your time and your attention, and I hope everybody enjoys the rest of your day. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Be well.
Thanks, everyone.